The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Holy shit!
In this world growing more crowded and perilous by the day, John Rourke must use every means at his command to stop the despotic dreams of the hero Marshall and his doomsday weapon. A weapon unleashing the evil, the beast, lurking in the heart of every man, to serve the lusts of Vladimir Karamazov.
What are your plans?
What do you do, Herr Doctor?
You are your father, but in some ways, I think you are not.
You didn't answer me.
I would blame the so-called hero marshal. I would also anticipate Herr Doctor Rourke's reactions once radio silence can be broken.
Very good, and very correct.
Comrades! This is Major Natalia Anastasia Diamarovna of the Committee for State Security. You have been betrayed by my husband, Vladimir Karamazov. He is not a hero. He is a traitor to you, to Russia, to Russia's history, to all the people of the world. He is evil. You fight now, brother against brother, father against son, all in service to Karamazov's lust for power.
The Survivalist, number 14, The Terror.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by James Konacek, David Coyne, Jeff Baker, Michael Replogle, Richard Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Margie Tompros, James Lewis, Christopher Graybill, Stephen Carpenter, Joe Brack, Michael Glenn, Tim Getman, Elizabeth Jernigan, Jonathan Watkins, Jason Stiles, Tim Carlin, Tom Simpson, Casey Platt, Kate Foster, Terrence Aselford, and Mort Shelby. The Last Gunfighter, number 11, Violent Sunday.
Frank Morgan liked Waco. As he rode into the Texas town, following the gentle curves of the Brazos River, he hoped nobody tried to kill him while he was here. That was always a nagging worry when a fellow was one of the dying breed known as gunfighters. Stormy's hooves clopped on the planks of the suspension bridge that spanned the Brazos. The river was wide and deep here, at least compared to the way it looked 100 miles or so upstream in Parker and Palo Pinto counties, Frank's old stomping grounds when he had been a boy. He had spent some time in Parker County a few months earlier, and everything had changed since his youth. At least it appeared that way to him, although he knew that the biggest change during those years had been within himself. The relatively carefree young man he had been was long gone, replaced by the wary loner that some people called the Drifter. For a while there, he hadn't been alone. He had married Dixie, a woman who was as good as she was beautiful. But she was gone, murdered by a son of a bitch who had met justice at Frank Morgan's hand. But meeting out justice hadn't brought Dixie back. Frank had made a friend during his crusade of vengeance, though. A young Texas Ranger named Tyler Beaumont. He was still up in Weatherford these days, doing his rangering there while he courted Victoria Monfort. Frank thought about Victoria as he rode along a wide street paved with cobblestones. He still didn't know if Victoria was really his daughter. Mercy Monfort, her mother, had refused to say, and Frank wasn't going to push the question. All that really mattered, he supposed, was that Victoria was a beautiful, intelligent young woman, and she seemed to be as fond of Tyler Beaumont as he was of her. Frank was glad for his friend, and glad for Victoria, too. Of course, Frank was never truly alone as long as he was with his horse, Stormy, and Wolf, the big cur that never seemed to leave his side. A man never had two more faithful companions than those two. And providing he had the time, he always liked to let them know what he was planning.
We'll find a stable and a place to stay in a few minutes. First, I want to find a drugstore. Get some liniment for this shoulder.
A couple of mornings earlier, he had gotten up with some sore, stiff muscles that pained every time he moved his left arm too much. The age he was getting to be, it didn't take much to make his muscles ache. Frank didn't have any sort of medication for it in his saddlebags, and Waco was the first real town he had come to since then.
This town's grown up quite a bit since I was last here, Wolf. I know, Wolf. I don't like it either. I ought to be able to get something for my shoulder here. Stay put, Wolf.
Frank Morgan was a tall man with the broad shoulders and lean hips of a natural-born horseman. A while back, he had been severely wounded and had lost a lot of weight, but his frame had just about filled back out to its normal muscular proportions. He wore jeans and a faded blue work shirt. Thick, graying dark hair hung out from under his brown Stetson. It would have been easy to take him for a roaming cowboy, except for the well-worn walnut grips of the Colt Peacemaker that rode in a black holster on his right hip, and the way his big right hand never strayed far from the butt of that gun. Frank went into the drugstore, which was the usual narrow, crowded frontier apothecary shop, with a counter in the back where all sorts of nostrums and tonics and other patent medicines were sold. A counter on the right-hand wall served as a soda fountain.
Got anything for a sore shoulder?
Sure do, mister. Some of my own concoction. I call it Dr. Alderton's Muscle Cream. Loosen you right up.
You're a doctor, are you?
Well, not really, but some people call me Doc. Well, that's close enough, isn't it?
Close enough for me, as long as that medicine of yours works. I'll take a jar.
Anything else I can do for you?
Well, that soda fountain looks refreshing. I could use a nice cool drink.
Coming right up. You know, most fellas who come in from the trail head straight for one of the saloons. They'd rather have a beer or whiskey than a phosphate.
I don't have anything against beer or whiskey. Sometimes, though, especially when it's hot, man needs something else to cut the dust.
Oh, you like this. Try that.
Mighty tasty. Another of your concoctions?
As a matter of fact, it is.
What do you call it?
Well, it doesn't really have a name yet. Now, folks have started calling it a Waco after the town, but my boss, Mr. Morrison, said it needs a better name than that.
Oh, whatever you call it, it's good.
Doc Alderton looked pleased as punch at the praise, but the smile suddenly vanished from his face as the little bell over the door jingled and he glanced in that direction. A worried frown appeared on his features as well. Up until now, Frank had been the only customer in the drugstore. He supposed the middle of the afternoon like this was a slack time for business. But since Alderton didn't look pleased by the arrival of another potential customer, Frank thought it might be wise to see who had just come in. He didn't like what he saw. He supposed that in the back of his mind, he had been expecting something like this. No matter where he rode, his reputation followed him. And to a certain type of man, That reputation was a siren song, an irresistible challenge that must be answered. The newcomer was young, not much more than 20. Dark hair curled out from under his battered hat. He wore patched and faded range clothes, but the gun belt around his hips was new and well cared for. So was the Colt that rode in the tied-down holster. The handle of the gun had pearl grips that seemed to sparkle and shine, even in the relatively dim light of the drugstore.
Frank Morgan. I thought it was you, but I couldn't hardly believe it. Folks were saying you was dead until you turned up in Weatherford a while back.
I'm not dead.
Now, Jonah, we don't want any trouble in here. Now, why don't you go on about your business?
Morgan, here is my business. I've been waiting for a chance like this, beginning to think it'd never come to me.
Well, Doc, I reckon this young boy is a bit of a troublemaker.
He fancies himself a fast gun.
Fancies himself? Listen, you snake oil peddler, I am a fast gun. Faster than anybody in Waco, that's for damn sure. And that includes this old man here.
I reckon you want to pull iron and kill me, don't you?
It's the only way. I'm sorry it's got to be this way, Morgan.
It doesn't. You can let me finish my drink and let me go on my way. That way you get to live, and I don't have to kill you.
You're mighty confident, Morgan. Some say arrogant.
Yeah, if you're bound and determined to go through with this, I'll oblige you. I'd appreciate it, though, if you give me a minute to finish my drink.
Sure. I don't see that it matters.
Thanks.
He turned back to the soda fountain counter and lifted the glass. Taking his time, Frank drained the rest of the cool, dark liquid from it. When he set the empty glass on the counter, he nodded to Alderton.
Mighty refreshing, Doc. All right, son. If you gotta do it, hook and draw.
Frank waited a tick of time, and still Jonah's iron was only half out of leather by the time Frank's Colt was leveled. The bullet took Jonah in the chest and smashed him back against the door behind him. The glass in the door didn't break, which surprised Frank a little. Jonah tried to finish his draw, but the gun slipped from his fingers and thudded to the floor. He grabbed the doorknob to hold himself up as he pressed his other hand to his chest. Blood seeped between his splayed fingers.
My God! My God!
I hope you're making peace with him and not just cussing.
Frank walked over to Jonah. A kick sent the fallen gun sliding across the planks until it was well out of reach. Frank reached down, checked for a pulse in Jonah's neck. Finding none, he straightened. Then, and only then, did he holster his own Colt.
You're really Frank Morgan. Well, I heard of you. There are books about you. Well, we even have some of them here in the store.
I suppose Waco is civilized enough now so that a shot will bring the law on the run.
Oh, yes, I imagine the law will be here shortly.
Frank gave a little shake of his head. He remembered when Waco had been such a wild place, it was known as Six Shooter Junction, and nobody would have paid much attention to a single gunshot. The youngster called Jonah had tried to recapture a little of that wildness, and all it had gotten him was dead. Bad luck had followed him. Just as death seemed to follow the man called the Drifter. Tyler Beaumont's heart pounded heavily in his chest. He had never been so scared in all his born days, and he had faced the notorious slaver and killer, Ephraim Swan, up in No Man's Land.
What was it you wanted to ask me, Tyler?
Beaumont tried not to gulp. He felt like the swing on the front porch of the Monfort home had suddenly turned into a bucking bronco and was threatening to pitch him into the air. His stomach was all tied up in knots, too, just like he was on the back of a sunfishing horse. Texas Rangers were supposed to be fearless, he reminded himself. Charge hell with a bucket of water and all that. The badge on his chest meant something, dadgummit. But that proud ranger heritage wasn't helping him a whole heap at the moment.
Well, cat got your tongue, Tyler?
She was playing with him, he told himself. She knew good and well what all his hemming and hawing had been leading up to, but she had a mischievous streak in her, and she was enjoying his discomfort.
Beautiful night is all. Not too warm.
Really, Tyler, if you got something to say to me, you should just go ahead and say it. It's all right, really.
Victoria, will you marry me? Oh, Lord, I'm sorry. I did it all wrong, didn't I? I'm so blame stupid. I meant to get on one knee. Victoria, will you do me the honor? I'd be the luckiest man in the world if you said... Victoria, will you make me the happiest man in the world by doing me the honor of becoming my wife?
Tyler, I would have said yes if you stopped after asking me the first time.
Wait, you said you would have said yes. Does that mean you won't say yes now?
No.
By that, do you mean...
I mean, yes, I'll marry you.
She slipped her hands out of his and laid them gently on either side of his face. It was a good thing his mouth was occupied right then, and for a while afterward, or else he probably would have whooped and disturbed some of the neighbors. Some folks hereabouts still went to bed with the chickens.
It's a beautiful ring, Tyler. Have you asked my father's permission yet?
Well, no. Now that you mention it, I haven't. I reckon I probably should have done that first.
Yes, he's a rather old-fashioned man. Go talk to him now and he won't have to know you already asked me.
Oh, Lordy, what if he says no?
He won't. I can practically guarantee it.
Practically?
Go on. You can do it. He won't bite you.
Beaumont wasn't so sure about that. Judge Isaiah Montfort had a pretty fearsome reputation. That reputation had grown even more when he had survived being kidnapped and tortured by some of his political enemies. Still, there was no point in postponing the confrontation. He was short, no denying that. Some might even call him sawed off, because he barely reached 5.5 feet in stature. But his shoulders were broad and muscular, and he knew how to handle himself in times of trouble. It was said of the Texas Rangers that they could ride like Comanches, shoot like Tennesseans, and fight like the very devil. Tyler Beaumont met all three of those qualifications. He paused at the front door and looked back at Victoria. She nodded encouragement to him. Tyler found Victoria's parents in the parlor. Both Judge Montfort and Mercy were reading as they sat in wing chairs. Mercy looked up at Beaumont and smiled. She had the same jet black hair as her daughter, although it had a white streak in it, and she was nearly as beautiful as Victoria.
Hello, Tyler.
Miss Montfort? Judge?
Beaumont, how are you this evening?
I'm fine, sir.
For a second, the thought that Victoria wasn't really the judge's daughter flitted through Beaumont's mind. He knew there was a possibility Frank Morgan had fathered Victoria. But Isaiah Montfort had raised her, and while blood mattered, so did that. Beaumont pushed those musings away. They had nothing to do with what was going on here and now.
Is Victoria still on the porch?
Yes, ma'am. I wanted to talk to the judge.
I believe I'll step out for a breath of air. It's a perfectly lovely evening, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. Perfectly.
What is it you wish to speak to me about, young man?
Well, sir, I reckon you know how I feel about your daughter.
No, I don't. You tell me.
I love her to pieces, sir. I want to marry her and love her and take care of her for the rest of our lives. I'm asking for your permission, sir, and for your blessing.
For a long moment, Montfort didn't say anything. When he finally spoke, there was a sharp edge to his voice.
You don't expect me to approve of this union because of what you and Frank Morgan did for me and my family, do you?
No, sir. I want you to approve of it because I love Victoria and she loves me.
She does she?
Yes, sir. There's no doubt of that in my mind.
Nor in my wife's mind. We've discussed the matter and she has spoken, Victoria. We know your feelings are genuine.
Well, that's all that matters, isn't it, sir?
No, it is not. You're a lawman. You have a dangerous profession. Now, if my daughter marries you, she runs the risk of becoming a widow.
Begging your pardon, Your Honor, but it seems to me that every woman who gets married runs that risk sooner or later.
Don't you call me Your Honor. We are not in court. You know precisely what I mean, Beaumont, so don't bandy words about. What if I say to you that if you want to marry Victoria, you're going to have to give up being a ranger?
Well, sir, I'd just say that that was mighty damn unfair of you. My pa was a ranger, and the proudest day of my life was when I pinned this star on my shirt.
You won't turn in your badge?
No, sir. Hell no.
Good. I won't have my little girl marrying a man who doesn't know how to stick by his guns.
Sir? Are you saying...
I'm saying that while I might wish Victoria had chosen a young man in a less hazardous line of work, she didn't. I won't stand in your way, son. You may have my permission and my blessing.
Oh, thank you, sir. And Mrs. Mumford...
You don't have to worry about Mercy. She and Victoria are probably out there on the porch planning the wedding right now. You better get back out there if you want to have any say in what's going to happen. Not that you will anyway. You might as well learn that right now, son, if you're going to get married.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Go on. Get to it.
I believe you must have something to ask my daughter, Tyler.
You told her I already asked you?
I didn't have to. All she did was take one look at me and she knew. But she's not upset. You set everything right, Tyler. Everything.
I reckon we'll invite a lot of people to the wedding, won't we?
Of course. I'm so happy I want to share it with all my friends and family.
What about Frank?
We all owe Mr. Morgan a great deal. It wouldn't be right not to invite him.
You don't think it would make you, well, uncomfortable for him to be there?
He's your best friend. Of course you have to invite him. Do you know how to get in touch with him?
He was going to wire me and let me know where he was, but he never did. Reckon he's been drifting so much he never got around to it. Maybe he just hasn't lit anywhere yet. I can put out the word, though. I know the general direction he was headed when he left here. It shouldn't take long for a message to catch up to him. A couple of weeks, maybe less, I hope.
Then you see, you don't have to worry. It'll take at least a month to plan the wedding. There'll be plenty of time to find Mr. Morgan and for him to get here.
And you don't think it'll bother your folks?
You let me worry about them. But I don't believe it'll be a problem, Tyler. I really don't.
Good.
And yet, the possibility of the judge or Mrs. Monfort being uncomfortable about having Morgan at the wedding wasn't the only worry. Like it or not, Frank Morgan had a certain reputation. Sometimes that notoriety caused trouble. Beaumont had witnessed it himself on numerous occasions. But not this one, he told himself. Fate meant for him and Victoria to be together, and their union would be a joyous occasion. Nothing would interfere with it. He intended to keep on telling himself that very thing until maybe, sooner or later, he believed it. The settlement was just a wide place in the road. And if it had a name, Chas Ferguson had never heard of it. He didn't care. There was a saloon, which also doubled as a general store. A blacksmith shop was the only other business. Across the road were two churches, a Baptist and a Methodist, Dunkers and Sprinklers. A handful of houses completed the community. All that mattered to him was that there was a saloon here, and he could get a drink. At the moment, Ferguson was the only customer in the bar. He sat at a table, idly turning over cards in a solitaire hand. From time to time, he emptied the whiskey glass at his elbow and then refilled it. He was young, somewhere in his 20s, and had long, fair hair that curled from under his hat and fell almost to his shoulders. He wore a black shirt with silver snaps and gray trousers tucked into high-topped black boots. His hat was white, almost snowy. A pearl-handled Colt rode in a low-slung holster on his right hip. No matter what his surroundings, Ferguson came off as something of a dandy. He looked even more like one in the rather squalid little saloon. Ferguson was here playing a waiting game, and his patience was running low. His mind wandered back to his last conversation with Cherokee Bob.
Make no mistake, kid. I'm fast with this Colt.
You can hook and draw, Mr. Ferguson, that's for sure. Best I ever seen.
Takes more than just speed, kid. It's not just the eye and the hand. You need heart. I didn't know that before. I do now, though, thanks to Frank Morgan.
I thought you hated him, Mr. Ferguson.
I do. I backed down from him once, but now I'm ready. And with your help, I'm gonna put a bullet in that son of a bitch.
You need my help?
Yes, I do. Morgan rode out of Weatherford, and I don't know where the hell he went. And Texas is a big place, boy. I'm not gonna ride around hoping I run into him. That's where you come in.
Oh, I'll do whatever you want, Mr. Ferguson.
Morgan is friends with that young ranger, Tyler Beaumont, who's still in these parts. I want you to keep an eye on Beaumont. Sooner or later, he'll lead me to Morgan.
I'll keep a close watch on him for you.
There's a little settlement just northwest of here. You know the place?
Yes, sir.
I'll wait there to hear from you.
I won't let you down, Mr. Ferguson.
See that you don't, kid.
Frowning down at the cards, Ferguson realized that the hand was blocked. He couldn't win at it. He swept the cards together into an untidy pile. When he tried to refill his glass from the bottle, only a few drops trickled out.
I'm empty here, damn it.
Hold your horses.
I can hurry you up a mite if you'd like.
Sorry. You want to keep running the tab?
Sure.
The bartender nodded and turned to start back to the bar. Ferguson let him get halfway there before the boredom got to be too much. Holding the Colt loosely on his thigh, he shifted the barrel a little and fired. The bullet shattered the empty bottle dangling from the bartender's hand. The bartender reacted more in surprise than pain and jumped higher than a fat man ought to have been able to jump. When he came down, he still had the busted neck of the bottle clutched in his hand. He swung around toward the table, breathing heavily as he did so. His eyes were still wide with fear, but something else lurked there too. Anger.
Think that was funny, do you?
As a matter of fact, I do. You hopped like a toad. Bet you never moved like that before in your life.
I thought for a second you'd killed me.
Well, I didn't. You ain't hurt, so leave me alone and let me get back to my drinking.
Not here.
What did you say?
I said you ain't drinking here. What did you think? That you could just waltz into a man's place of business and humiliate him, and that he wouldn't care? Well, by God, you can't. Not here.
You're booting me out of this flea-ridden pus-hole of a saloon?
Damn right I am. This place may not be much, but it's mine, damn it. I won't be humiliated in it.
You were humiliated just by being born, mister. And think how your mom must have felt when an ugly lump like you popped out of her.
That's it. I'm gonna shove this broken bottle up your... Ah! You killed me.
More than likely.
The wounded bartender tried to sit down at another table, but missed the chair and crashed into the floor. He sat there, leaning against the table leg and clutched his belly.
Probably take you an hour or so to die. While you're doing that, you can think about how you never should have come at me with that bottle.
They'll hang you.
I don't think so. It was self-defense, pure and simple.
You bastard!
Ferguson turned smoothly toward the saloon and saw that somehow the mortally wounded man had found the strength to pull himself to his feet and reach the bar. Now the bartender had a sawed-off shotgun in his blood-smeared hands, and he was trying to bring it to bear on Ferguson.
Well, I was wrong. It didn't take him an hour to die after all.
When his gun was reloaded, Ferguson holstered it, caught up his horse's reins again, and swung up into the saddle. He was aware that people were watching him from the blacksmith shop and from some of the houses, maybe even from the churches. But nobody stepped out to try to stop him. If the sheriff of whatever county this was came looking for him, his claim of self-defense would be stronger than ever. After all, the bartender had come rushing out after him, waving a scatter gun. What else could he have done, Ferguson asked himself, except hook and draw? He started to ride slowly out of town, heading down the road toward Weatherford. And as he did, he spotted a rider coming toward him at a pretty good clip. As he came closer, Ferguson recognized him as Cherokee Bob.
Damn it, Bob, you're getting dust all over me.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Ferguson, but I got some news I thought you'd want to hear as soon as possible, so I rode right out here looking for you.
You found me. What's this news? Something about Ranger Beaumont?
Yes, sir, and about Miss Monfort, too.
If all you want to tell me is that those two have been sparking...
No, sir, it's more than that. They're getting hitched.
Married, you mean?
Yes, that's right. I heard about it while I was hanging around down at the courthouse. The wedding is 2 weeks from Sunday.
Well, what do you know?
Did I do the right thing, Chaz?
You sure did. This is mighty interesting news. You know what it means, don't you?
It means Frank Morgan is liable to show up in town again, don't it?
That's right. I don't reckon anything would stop Morgan from attending the wedding of his best friend, do you?
No, sir. The Drifter will be there and then you can kill him.
That's right. I might wait until after the ceremony's over, though.
but the sight of Beaumont getting married, the last thing Frank Morgan ever sees before I send him straight to hell.
The shooting in Morrison's old corner drugstore hadn't brought any serious repercussions for Frank Morgan. A blue-uniformed policeman had shown up a few minutes later to find out what had happened, but Doc Alderton's unhesitating confirmation of Frank's story made the lawman decide against arresting Frank. At the inquest, the coroner's jury hadn't taken long to return with a verdict of self-defense. Frank being cleared officially of wrongdoing hadn't stopped both the Waco chief of police and the McLennan County sheriff from paying him a visit at his hotel. Both officials warned him that they didn't want any trouble in their bailiwick. He spent a couple of weeks in town, drinking and playing cards, and sitting on the veranda of the hotel overlooking the Brazos River. Several times a day, he strolled down to the livery stable to check on Stormy and Wolf. It was a peaceful interlude. Nobody tried to kill him. He knew it couldn't last, of course. One evening, while he was sitting on the veranda, Frank's attention was drawn to a man riding down the street toward the hotel. Instantly, Frank sat up straighter in the cane-bottom chair where he had been lounging. One booted foot was propped up on the railing around the veranda. He brought it down. His hand moved closer to the butt of the gun at his hip. The man on horseback sat tall and straight in the saddle as he approached. An undefinable air about him said that he was both alert and dangerous. He wore a high-crowned black hat and a cowhide vest. His shirt had leather cuffs. As he came closer, Frank saw that his bearded face was craggy and weather-beaten. It was almost like gazing in a mirror, because he knew that other than being clean-shaven, his own features had the same well-worn look. The stranger brought his horse to a stop in front of the hotel and gave Frank a nod. Frank returned it and glanced along the veranda. Several men in suits were gathered about 10 yards away, talking among themselves. Traveling salesmen, more than likely. Beyond them, several ladies sat enjoying the cooling air after the heat of the day. Frank would have preferred if there hadn't been so many people around. He didn't care much for dusk, either. It was bad light for shooting.
Howdy.
Evening.
I reckon you'd be Frank Morgan.
That's right.
I got a message for you. I'm a friend of yours.
Who might that be?
Tyler Beaumont.
What's the message?
Got it written down here. I'll reach for it real slow. I don't want to spook you.
The gesture moved the man's vest aside enough so that Frank suddenly saw the badge pinned to the shirt underneath it. It was the 5-peso star in a circle, the unmistakable emblem of the Texas Rangers.
You're a ranger?
That's right. Name's Cobb. I was passing through, stopped at the ranger post over at Fort Fisher. Seems that Beaumont sent out messages to all the ranger posts in this neck of the woods, looking to get word to you. They just got here today. The boys in Company F knew you were in town and staying here, so they asked me to stop by and give you the message, since I was riding this way anyway.
He held out the folded paper, leaning down from the saddle to give it to Frank. Frank took it, unfolded it, and held it so that the light coming through the windows from the hotel lobby fell on it. His eyes scanned the words printed there, and as their meaning soaked in, a grin spread across his face.
Good news?
Mighty good news. You know Beaumont?
Nope. I used to work out of the post at Veal Station, not far from Weatherford, but that was a while back. I never crossed trails with the young'un.
He's getting married.
Yeah, I thought you said it was good news.
He's marrying a mighty fine young woman.
Well, I don't doubt it. But rangering ain't what you call a safe, steady profession. You're old enough to recall what Russell, Majors, and Waddell advertised for when they were looking for fellas to join the Pony Express.
Orphans preferred.
That's right. Wouldn't be a bad idea for the rangers to do likewise. Orphans and single men preferred. They don't listen to me, though. Be seeing you, Morgan.
So long, Cobb. Thanks for bringing the message.
The ranger waved without looking around as he rode off slowly along the Brazos. Frank watched him go for a moment, and then looked down again at the paper in his hand. He read the message a second time, taking particular note of the date. The wedding was going to be on a Sunday. This was Saturday, Frank thought. 2 weeks from tomorrow, Tyler Beaumont and Victoria Monfort would be man and wife.
That meant there was a chance Beaumont would be his son-in-law, although Frank knew good and well neither Victoria nor her mother would ever confirm or deny that. It didn't matter, Frank told himself. Either way, Beaumont was his best friend, and Frank wanted to be there when the young man got hitched. No way in hell was he going to miss this wedding. Frank rode out of Waco early the next morning, taking the river trail that followed the Brazos northwestward. After being cooped up in a stable for much of the past few weeks, Stormy enjoyed being on the move again. The Big Appaloosa kicked up his heels in a frisky fashion and stretched out into a ground-eating lope. Wolf ranged alongside, keeping up easily, when he wasn't too busy chasing rabbits and birds. Frank had plenty of supplies, so he didn't bother stopping at any of the small settlements he came to. He slept under the stars at night and felt just fine about it. He could have made better time, but he didn't see any need to push Stormy. As it was, he was going to reach Weatherford several days before the wedding. He was a 2 days' ride away from his destination when the Appaloosa threw a shoe. Frank could have fixed the problem himself, but as it happened, he was passing through a little settlement called Nemo, and there was a blacksmith shop just a few yards further on.
Anybody home?
That's a good one.
I hear it, Wolf. Somebody's taking a licking back there. I know, it's none of my business. I'm just gonna take a look. You stay.
The back door was a few inches ajar. Frank pushed it open the rest of the way and stepped through it as he heard more blows being struck. None of the 5 men in the little yard behind the blacksmith shop noticed him at first. That gave him the chance to study the situation. It was pretty simple, really. 4 men had ganged up on another man and were beating the hell out of him. The victim wore a thick canvas apron that identified him as the blacksmith. So did the heavy muscles in his bare arms and shoulders. Under normal circumstances, he probably could have thrashed the men attacking him, but one of the men was standing back a little, holding a revolver that he pointed at the blacksmith's head. If the smith had put up a fight, he might have gotten his brains blown out. The smith, reeling from the beating, shook his head emphatically from side to side, slinging drops of crimson blood on the man who had been beating him. The man reached down to pick up a piece of wood from a stack near his feet.
Damn you! I'll kill you for that!
I don't think so.
Who the hell are you?
Somebody who doesn't like what he's seeing. It's 4 against 1, and you're holding a gun to boot. Doesn't hardly seem fair.
It's also none of your damn business. Now get out of here while you still can.
Not without my friend here.
Friend? You're a stranger hereabouts, mister. You don't even know this man.
Is that right? Well, let me ask him. You and me are friends, aren't we?
I never saw you before. But right now, there's no doubt you're the best friend I've got in this world, mister.
There. You see?
I don't see nothing, except some dumb son of a bitch sticking his nose in where it ain't wanted. Are you blind? I got a gun here.
So do I.
There's 4 of us and only 1 of you.
Those are pretty bad odds, all right. But I reckon if you don't mind being outnumbered, that's your choice.
That's a good one.
Forget about Craddock. I'll cover him. Just teach this bastard a lesson he'll never forget.
The 2 men holding the blacksmith's arms let go of him and stepped toward Frank. The one who had been handing out the beating moved toward him too. If Frank had been expecting any help from the blacksmith, it looked like he was going to be disappointed. The burly, bearded man tried to stay on his feet, but he had taken too much punishment. He slipped to his knees and then crumpled the rest of the way to the ground.
You never did tell us your name, mister. I like to know whose bones I'm breaking.
My name is Frank Morgan.
Jesus!
My peacemaker's aimed right between your eyes, pal. I wouldn't pull that trigger if I was you.
How did you... My gun's already drawn, dammit!
First isn't always best, just usually.
I could still kill you.
Maybe, just maybe. But you'd never know one way or the other, because you'd be dead first. So what's it gonna be?
Let me have him, mister. You just keep Grady covered and I'll handle the other 3.
Are you in any shape to do that, friend?
Not really. But I'm going to anyway.
Have at it, then.
The blacksmith whipped his wooden club around like an expert and used his tree trunk-sized arms to throw 1 man and then another around like a little girl's doll. The loud crack Frank heard coming from the arm of another of the men assured him that this one was out of the fight too. The lone, uninjured man was on the ground. He scuttled backward, scooting his butt in the dust as the blacksmith stood up and turned toward him.
That's enough! Enough, Craddock!
Enough? Not hardly.
Stop him! He'll kill him! He's insane!
Nah, probably just mad as hell. And I don't reckon I blame him.
Look, that's it! I holstered my gun. You win, Morgan. Just call off that group before he kills somebody.
Hey, Craddock, you gonna kill that son of a bitch?
No, I don't suppose I will. I want to make sure he remembers me, though. Thought it would be fun to gang up on me, didn't you?
Well, Mr. Gunman, you'd better figure out a way to get your buddies out of here. Then hit the trail. All of you.
I'm just one man. I can't handle all of them.
Where are your horses?
Out front.
Bring them around here and load the men one at a time. Tie them in the saddle if you have to. Just get out and be quick about it.
Or what? You'll murder us all? I heard about you. You're a gunfighter. The one they call the Drifter. Nothing but a low-down killer.
If I was as bad as I'm painted sometimes, you'd be dead by now, mister. You best remember that. Now get moving.
Grady struggled to lift his friends one by one into their saddles.
Oh, damn it! You fat bastard! Get up here!
Since none of them could handle the reins themselves, Grady gathered them all up and led the other horses as he rode out, casting a final venomous stare over his shoulder at Frank.
You made some bad enemies today.
If men like that weren't my enemies, I'd know I was doing something wrong.
Reuben Craddock's the name. I'm much obliged to you, Mr. Morgan.
Make it Frank.
After learning the reason for Frank's stop at his blacksmith shop, Reuben performed the necessary work, and though Frank objected, charged him nothing.
There you go, Stormy. Yeah, as good as new. There'll be no charge for that, Frank.
It's not necessary.
Believe me, you've more than paid in full. How about staying for supper?
Frank took Reuben up on the offer and soon found that it was a good decision. The blacksmith's quarters were next to the shop. It was a small house with a single room that served as kitchen, bedroom, and living area. Reuben's bunk was against the far wall. The furnishings in the room were strictly utilitarian, except for a bookcase full of leather-bound volumes. Frank had thought that Reuben sounded like an educated man, and the sight of the books confirmed it. And despite his burly appearance, Frank's host turned out to be a decent cook and more than pleasurable company. Through the next few hours, Frank and Reuben talked about everything from the weather, Reuben's love of good books, even life and its painful realities. In a very short time, they had become friends. They also talked about the events from the afternoon and whether Reuben's attackers would return seeking revenge.
Those men from earlier, did you know them?
They've worked on various ranches around here. Mostly, though, they just hang around in the saloons in Granberry and Glen Rose and cause trouble.
They're liable to come back and try to even the score.
I'm not afraid of them. Next time I see him coming, I'll grab my greener and be ready for him.
Just keep an eye out for him. That kind doesn't seem to know when to quit.
You'll stay the night, won't you? I can sleep out in the shed. You can have my bunk.
It's not necessary. I'll spread my bedroll in the shed and be obliged for it.
You sure?
Certain. You can feed me breakfast in the morning, though, and brew up a pot of coffee.
Yeah, I could sure do that.
Frank wasn't just being polite. He'd much rather pitch his bedroll in the shed. He never minded the company of Stormy and Wolf, and the blacksmith's mule seemed all right, too. He had a final smoke, then stretched out on his blankets and went to sleep with an animal-like speed and ease. He wasn't sure how much time had passed, when his eyes suddenly snapped open and he was instantly awake. But he was certain of one thing, because all his instincts told him it was true. Trouble was afoot in the darkness. The first thing that Frank noticed was the smoke. Not tobacco smoke from a quarry or a pipe, but wood smoke.
Take it easy, Wolf. I smell it too. Something's on fire, and it's real close.
Frank pulled the iron from leather. A crackling sound reached his ears, and the smell of smoke was stronger as Frank stepped out of the shed and looked around. The back door of the blacksmith shop was open, and a red glare came from inside. He knew the smoke and the glare weren't coming from the forge. He started toward the door, but he had taken only a couple of steps when something hit him from behind, slamming across his shoulders and knocking him forward. Somehow, Frank managed to hold on to the Colt. As he rolled over, he saw the stars above him blotted out suddenly by a looming shape. In a heartbeat, he recognized the shape as a man standing over him with some sort of bludgeon lifted over his head, ready to bring it down in a crushing blow. The bullet hit whatever it was his attacker was using as a club and knocked it out of his hands. At the same time, Frank's leg snapped out in a kick. Regaining his feet, Frank turned toward the rear of the blacksmith shop as another man appeared, this one drawing a bead on him with his Colt. The peacemaker bucked in his hand as Frank returned the fire. Frank could see that the blacksmith shop was fully engulfed in flames now. He had to find Reuben and quick. He ran to the door of the small house. Frank jerked to the side, just in case anyone inside fired at him.
Reuben! Reuben, are you in there? Stay there! I'll come to you.
Over here.
Frank ignored the heat of the blaze that pounded at him like a giant fiery fist. When he reached the bunk, he tucked the revolver behind his belt and bent to grab Reuben.
Frank! Behind you!
You should have minded your own business, Morgan.
Through eyes watering from the smoke, Frank saw the figure of a gunman just as the man fired at him again. The bullet ripped through Frank's jeans, burning a brand on the flesh underneath.
Let me get you out of here, Reuben.
Frank burst out into the clearer, cooler night air, and it seemed to give him the strength he needed to stagger away from the burning buildings. When he judged that he had gone far enough, Morgan stopped, and his muscles chose that moment to give way. The two men sprawled side by side on the grass.
We need more buckets over here! Hurry!
Hey, you men! Get those animals to safety!
It's too late to save it now. You people are just wasting water.
Who the hell are you, mister? Where's Reuben?
He's over there. Either knocked out or passed out. I think he's gonna be all right, though.
That don't tell us who you are.
Frank Morgan. I'm a friend of Reuben's.
Frank figured that was true enough. Even though they had known each other only a few hours, Frank considered them friends.
How'd this whole thing get started?
I don't know yet, but I can sure find out. This one here's part of it. He's out cold right now. When he wakes up, we can question him. I recognize him from a dust-up a few guys had with Reuben this afternoon.
Yeah, we all recognize him. He usually travels with a pack. Where are his buddies?
One of them is right here.
Hey, what do you think you're doing?
You reckon burning down a man's home and business evens things up?
I don't know what you're talking about. Back off, Morgan.
The hell you don't know. One of your partners is lying over there knocked out. Another one is shot there by the shop. And I'll wager the third one is inside the house with my lead in him.
Are you confessing a murder, Morgan? Because that's sure what it sounds like to me.
The only ones who had murder on their minds tonight were you and your friends. Two of you set the blacksmith shop on fire while the other two snuck into Reuben's house, knocked him out, and started a fire in there, too.
You're crazy. I never tried to hurt nobody. Hell, I came up and helped try to save that shed, didn't I?
Yeah, you came up just like you said, Grady. Both fires were already burning pretty strong before you got here.
Like maybe you were hiding somewhere in the shadows, just waiting for a good moment so you could help out and pretend to be innocent.
You can't prove that. It's just a story.
No, it's not.
Reuben, you're okay.
It's not just a story. I can prove Frank's telling the truth. I woke up just in time to see Grady standing over my bunk with a gun in his hand. I reckon he pistol whipped me then and knocked me out before he set fire to everything I have.
You bastard! You ignorant, numbskulled bastard!
I reckon he's a heap smarter than you'll ever be.
At least Reuben's not going to be headed for prison to do a stretch for attempted murder.
Neither am I!
Looks like he was right, Reuben. He's not going to jail.
Appears so, Frank. Hey, Frank, you all right?
Well, I'll be. Judging by this wet spot on my shirt, I must have gotten nicked. Didn't even know it.
Then he slid into a hot, smoky blackness, tinged with the red of flames. Tyler Beaumont swallowed hard and fought the urge to rip the tie from around his neck and yank his collar open. He had never liked having anything tight around his neck. He told himself it wasn't really that bad. He was just nervous, and what man wouldn't be on his wedding day? He decided that if he thought about Victoria, that would calm him down. But that was a mistake, because whenever he thought about Victoria, his mind inevitably wandered to how sweet and hot her mouth was when he kissed her, and the soft warmth of her body when he held her in his arms, and how tonight they would be man and wife at last, and finally able to come together in the way that a married couple should.
What?
Boy, you pert near jumped out of your skin. Calm down, son. You're just getting married. Ain't like you gotta fight a horde of screaming Comanche.
Were you that relaxed on your wedding day?
Well, not really, I reckon. Getting hitched was a mighty big step for an old bachelor like me.
It's a big step for a young bachelor like me, too. What if I'm doing the wrong thing?
Well, do you love Victoria?
Of course I do.
Well, then you ain't doing the wrong thing. The best decision I ever made was to pull in double harness with Carolyn. You'll see. It'll all work out.
I hope so. I sure hope so.
Anyways, it's gonna be a great shindig. You seen what's going on outside?
Well, I know it's a damn big crowd of people.
Yep. The judge and Miss Montfort are pretty well liked around these parts.
I see the ladies are putting the tables together for the party.
Yeah, there's no party like a Texas wedding.
That means plenty of good food, cakes, pies, and the like.
Right. And old Jimmy just set up his ice cream freezer. He's got that wooden handle already cranking. A little while, you and Victoria will be married, and I'll be eating ice cream.
Well, then, seems like I'm doing the right thing after all. Any word from Frank?
Well, now, don't you reckon I'd have told you if I'd heard anything?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Luke.
You sure he got the word?
Pretty sure. I wrote to ranger posts all around the state, and I know that the message reached him in Waco. A friend of mine at Company F told me that Frank had started for Weatherford over 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tyler. I reckon he just got delayed somewhere.
Yeah, there's a good chance of that, Luke. Frank seems to have a knack for walking into trouble. That's probably because of his habit of sticking up for the underdog and trying to see to it that justice is done.
Well, I'm sure he's trying his best to get here, Tyler.
Unless he was dead, Beaumont thought. No matter how fast a man was with his gun, his luck had to run out sooner or later. No man was invincible, not even Frank Morgan.
People are filling up the church pretty good now, Tyler.
Now?
You ready, Tyler?
I reckon I'm about as ready as I'll ever be.
Well, come on, son. Time to get you hitched proper.
I just wish Frank was here.
I know, he's your best friend, son. But we can't wait any longer.
I know. I'm all right. Whew. Let's go.
On the ridge, overlooking the church, Chaz Ferguson lowered a pair of field glasses from his eyes and bit back a curse. Beside him, Cherokee Bob was anxious.
Morgan ain't there yet?
No sign of him, and it looks like the wedding's about to start. Everybody's going inside the church.
I thought you said Morgan was bound to show up.
I thought he'd be here. I would have sworn that he would be, but it looks like he ain't.
Maybe he's dead.
What the hell do you mean?
You told me how folks are always challenging Morgan, wanting to prove they're faster than he is. What if he came up against somebody who really is faster and got himself killed?
The only man in these parts who's faster than Morgan is me. If there was anybody else around who's that good, I would have heard about him.
Well, you know, maybe something else happened. An accident, maybe. He might have got run over by a wagon, and maybe a beer barrel fell on his head.
Are you addle-pated? How could a beer barrel fall on Morgan's head?
I don't know, but if it did, it might have killed him.
Ferguson took a deep breath and gritted his teeth. Shooting the dim-witted youngster wouldn't accomplish anything. Well, it might make him feel a little better for a few minutes, Ferguson allowed,
but other than that...
Hey, Ryder, over yonder!
Ferguson stiffened and swung around to look where Cherokee Bob was pointing. Even at this distance, several hundred yards away, Ferguson could see that the horse had a dappled pattern to its hide. He jerked the field glasses to his eyes. The hated face of Frank Morgan sprang into sharp relief, as if Morgan were only a few feet away. Quickly, Ferguson lowered the glasses. He didn't want Morgan to see the sun reflecting off them. Morgan was the sort of man who would notice something like that.
It's him. It's him, all right. He was almost too late, but he got here in time.
In time for the wedding, you mean?
In time to die.